All rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This morning we are here first with case 12-1722, Oak Tree Condominium Association versus Hallmark Building Company et al. For the appellant, Mr. Ott.
May it please the court. My name is Steve Ott, and together with Amanda Aquino-Barreto, we represent the appellant, Oak Tree Condominium Association. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
Okay.
Ohio Revised Code Section 2305.131 is unconstitutional as applied to Oak Tree Condominium Association in this case because it extinguished a cause of action that had accrued and vested prior to the effective date of that statute. Oak Tree Condominium Association is a 7-unit association with 6 buildings. The owners, the completion was completed in 1990. The owners began noticing cracks in their walls. They contacted a structural engineer who came out and reviewed it and gave them an opinion on October 27th, 2003. This opinion was that the plans for that association called for 42-inch footers. The building code at that time was 36 inches, but these footers at Oak Tree were sometimes as shallow as 17 inches. And as a result, this association sat on top of the frost plain and heaved and settled with the freeze-thaw cycle in Northeast Ohio. As a result, as of October 27, 2003, the owners knew at that time that there was a cause of action, that they had a cause of action for the failure to perform in a workmanlike manner. According to the statute and to this court's prior rulings, that's a 4-year statute of limitations. After 03, on April 7th of 05, only 18 months later, the statute of repose, 2305.131, was effective. That was one of the enactment date. Our complaint was filed in December of 05, and a jury returned a verdict in favor of the association in 09. Oak Tree's cause of action became accrued and vested during the time that there was no statute of repose. This statute is unconstitutional as it applied to us, as applied to Oak Tree Condominium Association, because it extinguished this cause of action that they had a right to. There are two Ohio constitutional provisions that are at play with this case. The first one is Section 16, Article 1, which is a right to a remedy. So the association, as of October 27th of 2003, had a right to a remedy that was vested and accrued as of that date. So according to this, the Constitution, we shall have a remedy by due course of law and shall have just and administered.
So, counsel, the accrual of the right to remedy, you're saying dates from the time of the condo association's knowledge of the problem rather than the actual act itself? I mean, assuming that this was correct, that there was a negligent building, assuming that occurred when? When was the building actually constructed?
The buildings were completed in 1990.
All right, and you're saying that if there was any and negligent activity, it didn't occur from that date.
Well, they wasn't discovered until October 27th of 03, and this is a discovery statute on these failure to perform in a workmanlike manner cases. You're not going.
What case are you relying on for the discovery rule in this particular case?
The case of Velada versus Leo Petronozio. It's an 82 Supreme Court case. And that set forth this 4-year statute of limitations on a discovery basis. So on construction defects, you're not going to see. It's not like a car accident where we have the negligence is obvious. Particularly in cases like footers, where you're not going to see, the owner's not going to determine that unless they do an exploratory dig.
But we have two things here. The statute of limitations, and I understand the discovery rule tells you, you know, we understand here we have a problem, we have 4 years to do something about it. The statute of repose, though, if I understand it correctly, if there's negligent activity, the statute of repose gives the 10 years or whatever the term is and says you're at risk for someone finding out about this and then having the additional statutory of limitations time to actually file. Am I incorrect on that?
That's correct, but at the time the Oak Tree's cause of action accrued, there was no statute of repose. And so what the Court of Appeals did is they applied it retroactively to our fact situation. So in 05, they looked back and they applied the 10-year rule to us, even though it wasn't in place at that time.
They used the 1990 date going forward.
Clearly, there's no question that was the date the certificate of occupancies were issued.
Right.
So that's clear. That was the completion date for that construction.
Have we discussed retroactivity in this regarding this statute before?
You did with regard to products liability case and with regard to a medical malpractice case, but not with regard to our construction defect cases. And what you've said is that there is it's a two-step test. And the first step is to see whether or not the statute applies it retroactively on its face. And we know that this statute does. The second step is to determine whether or not that retroactivity is substantive. And if it's substantive, that is, if the retroactivity denies a party an accrued right, or it takes away a vested right or accrued right, then it is substantive. And then that violates the Ohio Constitution, Section 28, Article 2, which says that the General Assembly shall have no power to pass retroactive laws. And that's been construed to mean substantively.
So we would have to agree with you that the right accrued when they actually found out about this situation.
That's correct. It's a right of discovery.
Should there be a different analysis for a construction case as opposed to any other cases where a statute of repose has been enacted?
Where it's been retroactively applied?
Yes.
I think the analysis is going to be the same as what you've set out in your Grock case. And we look at it.
So you'd have us follow Grock?
We would say that Grock stands for the claimant, the plaintiff, has a reasonable time to file their action after the cause of action accrues. And we've said, as Grock and as the Adams case prior to that, it's the statute of limitations is the reasonable amount of time. So this case accrues in 03, we should have until 07 to file this lawsuit. Otherwise, the statute takes away our right to a remedy, takes away our vested right. And we're only talking about this case. This is applying to this case, not to the statute of repose generally.
And when was the case filed?
Our case was filed December 16th, 2005, which is a few months after the statute of repose was enacted, which was April 7th of 2005. So there's a several month difference. But it was well within our 4-year statute.
But counsel, on that 4-year statute, here I think we have an unusual bit of uncodified law that shows the legislative intent to promote a greater interest than the interest underlying the general 4-year statute of limitations. So why, if we have that expression of legislative intent, why would we impose the 4-year?
We would respectfully suggest that they're both working in concert. The 4-year statute prohibits stale litigation. It has to be filed within 4 years. The statute of repose legitimately does that as well. This is a unique set of facts where our cause of action accrued and then the statute was imposed. And so it's not a typical kind of situation. Neither one of those, the statute, if it's not retroactively applied, or our 4-year statute of limitations defeats that purpose for both of those statutes. It doesn't prevent I mean, our suggest the four-year statute does not prevent us from litigating stale litigation.
Does it have to be a definite time frame? Could it possibly be a factual determination of what is a reasonable time for this party? Why do we have to have a bright line rule?
Well, the court has said it's got to be they should have a reasonable time,
right,
afford a reasonable opportunity to have its claim heard.
Mm-hmm.
And the question to us was, well, what's a reasonable time? Is it 2 years? Is it 3 years? Or is it 4 years?
And I guess what I'm asking, though, is why do we have to, in this case, establish a bright line to say, under these circumstances, it has to be 2 years, or it has to be 4 years, or it has to be something else? Couldn't we also say this should be a factual determination, and so the court is going to have to determine whether your client filed within a reasonable time?
We would suggest that if the court doesn't want to do the red line, bright line kind of determination, that Oak Tree did file within a reasonable amount of time. In these types of cases, it's not like an auto accident or a device left in a patient or something. There's a lot of testing that's done. We had to do test bores around all of those buildings to determine the extent of the damage.
But that's not necessarily a factual determination that we would make. I mean, did the trial court make a factual determination that regardless of what you want to call the statute of limitations, this was filed within a reasonable time, or would we have to send it back?
Well, we would suggest, yes, that this was a reasonable amount of time that we filed this within 2 years.
So you want us to make that factual determination?
We would like you to make the determination that Oak Tree filed within a reasonable amount of time.
Counsel, that troubles me. I'm reading the Court of Appeals opinion. Mm-hmm. And they found, under Brenneman, it appeared Oak Tree untimely filed its action. Who made that decision?
Who made which decision? The Brenneman decision?
No, the decision that you were untimely. Something the Court of Appeals just did on their own?
Yes. Yes, the Court of
Appeals. They just said it's untimely without the trial court weighing in on that issue?
Correct. The Court of Appeals looked at Grock, and Grock was 2 years. And so the Court of Appeals said 2 years. But Grock was a products liability. That was a 2-year statute of limitations. They didn't say we're going to make a factual determination because 34 days certainly wasn't enough, but maybe 6 months would be.
You also were explaining that this is not an auto accident case. It can't just be filed tomorrow afternoon.
That's correct.
You also have a different element, being a condominium association, don't you?
We do.
We don't have one individual that says, I think I will do this.
We have to get the blessing of the board, which is a 5-member board. We have to raise the money because it's not a business. There, all the owners have to contribute cash in to pay the expert to do the digs, which is an assessment process. It's not something that I can turn around tomorrow and say, well, let's file this. It's a process. So it's a nonprofit corporation. It's got to go through those pieces.
So if we adopt your 4-year period in this instance, for example, the statute of repose is 10 years in this instance. Is that what the legislature put forth?
That's correct.
And so if we added 4 years, it would be a 17-year statute. It would 17 years from the time. Am I right?
I believe that's right. Yes, that would be 17. Well, it would be 15 years from when we filed the
when
complaint.
You filed, but 17 if we went with 4 years.
Correct.
So how do we reconcile that?
The statute of repose did not exist at the time our cause of action accrued. And so they can't be retroactively applied to our fact situation here.
When do you think the cause of action accrued?
I think it accrued October 27, 2003, when the client knew or should have known that there was a construction defect problem. And that was when the expert came to them and said, hey, your footers are...
But there had to be something prior to that would have prompted the expert coming.
There was cracks in the walls.
Would that be notice?
That's notice that there's a problem. It could have been normal shifting. It could have been a number of different things. But in order to pursue a construction defect case, you have to have an expert.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
As we had indicated that the...
Counsel, you're into your rebuttal time.
Excuse me. Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Roach?
Morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, members of the Ohio Supreme Court. My name is Patrick Roach. I was trial counsel for Hallmark in this matter. I would concede at the outset that based on the finding of the 11th District Court of Appeals, based on this court's prior findings, that the plaintiffs did have a substantive vested right at issue here. I disagree with counsel regarding the facts as to which when exactly that may have accrued. There was evidence in the case that one of the condominium owners reported cracks as early as 2000, and that after that time it was investigated, and what happened on October 27, 2003 was not the first time anybody knew about this. This was a meeting of the condominium association at which a gentleman who happened to be both a licensed engineer and a licensed attorney addressed the members of the group and said, according to the minutes that we had, that you have a lawsuit, that there is a period of time that is beginning to run here and something should happen. And this gentleman is the same person who served as an expert during the trial of this case and testified on behalf.
Now, counsel, let me ask you a question along those lines. I'm over here. When a homeowner sees a crack in the basement floor, does he know anything other than he has a crack in the basement floor?
Probably not.
So isn't a fair argument to be made that the condominium association is not on notice of a defect in workmanship until somebody comes and tells them this crack in the floor is caused by a defect in workmanship? Isn't that logically where the cause of action would begin?
I would agree with that example, Your Honor. Yes, if there's a crack in the floor, a layperson, not a construction person, has no reason to know that's a construction defect. In this case, we had two owners who talked about a common wall between them. In addition to cracks in their units, Mr. Swanson and Ms. Artino had said that they had both had these cracks. This caused them to report it to the association, which caused this meeting to take place. October 27th was certainly the date on which all this culminated. I think it's extraordinary that we would have a case where we are discussing when did the cause of action accrue, and the facts of the case are there was a meeting when an expert said, in those words, you have a cause of action. So if we take the date of October 27, 2003, I still think that our issue here is that having a substantive vested right, limitations are there that can be placed on the exercise of that right? What remedies can be addressed and limited in the exercise of that right? And I think that in finding in this case that applying as the 11th District did a period of 2 years takes into account the interests of all concerned.
But that 2 years was related to a products liability, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And here we have a construction situation.
Yep. Yes, Your Honor.
Which is a little different.
Very much so.
And isn't there a 4-year statute of limitations associated with construction?
Yes.
So why not the 4-year statute of limitation?
Because when the legislature enacted the statute of repose, in addition to the comments they made regarding the reason they're doing it, one of which was that there is a greater interest here than there is in the case of a statute of limitations when we discuss the statute of repose. The language of the statute itself includes a section whereby if you are in the last 2 years of that 10-year statute, year 8 and year 9, then you get an additional 2 years within which to bring your cause of action. And I think that this court has previously held that that is a major factor in considering in a construction case what is a reasonable period of time in which to bring this cause of action. The court certainly could shrug and say that, well, whatever the statute of limitations is, if it's a construction case, it's 4, if it's an injury case, it's 2, let's just go with that, in which case I think we have negated the effects of a statute of repose, which, regardless of what your opinions are for or against it, it has been held to be valid in as long as it does not, as long as it is in practice and in effect remedial, that it does not take away a right, that it does not substantially interfere
Counsel, I think that's why we're here today, isn't it? The reality is that I think everybody in the room will agree that when the engineer said you have a cause of action, they probably did have a cause of action. What do you say to the argument that you're faced with this morning? Can the General Assembly then walk in 2 years later and say, we've decided you no longer have that cause of action? Isn't that a retroactive application of a statute of a substantive right?
It's a statute that addresses a substantive right. It does not affect the validity of the substantive right. It does not take away the substantive right. It provides a limited time in which you can seek redress for that substantive right. And this court has held that as long as that is a reasonable period of time, then it is constitutionally acceptable.
So according to you, assuming that August 27th, 2003, for purposes of argument, assuming that's the date that the cause of action accrued, when should the lawsuit have been filed? By what date?
October 27th of 2005, the period of 2 years.
And you're saying 2 years because?
I'm saying 2 years because the statute itself, well, one of the factors is the statute of itself provides a period of 2 years if the claimant is making a claim in year 8 or 9 of the running of the statute of repose. The fact that the statute of limitations in this type of action is 4 years, that is something to be considered. But a judgment has to be made that what period of time should control, what period of time balances the rights of the claimant against a builder, who in this case, I think there are extraordinary facts here in terms of the builder. We had the city building inspector was deceased. Our subcontractor was deceased. My client at the time of the trial was 84 years of age. Witnesses were not available, material was not available. This is why we have a statute of repose, Your Honor, because we build a building, we step away from it, we have no control over it, we cannot maintain it. We don't know if the owner is maintaining it. Are you caulking it? Are you doing, in the case of a foundation, are you bringing the grade up where it originally was, or are you letting the grade slip down?
Wasn't this a case of deficient depth for the footers?
That's
not affected by anybody's death. You just measure it.
Well, you can measure it at the time the lawsuit takes place, Your Honor, which was done by the plaintiff's expert and by my expert. But you cannot offer direct evidence as to when I built this thing and when I approved this thing on behalf of the city, it met the city code requirement of 36 inches, which was my position at the trial of this case. The jury felt differently, and so be it.
So but, you're saying they did put in 36-inch footers, but
yes,
they were no longer 36-inch footers when the experts measured them?
Well, there are some spots where the construction was done where my expert was of the opinion that the grade was not the same as it was when it was built, that the grade had lowered over a period of time due to settling, landscaping, and things such as that. There was also a difference of opinion between the two experts as to how these things were measured. I recall my expert saying that as many as 12 inches should be added to the measurement made by the plaintiff's expert for reasons that he explained as an engineering expert that I don't pretend to understand. But so that was a question of fact, Your Honor, and obviously the jury felt that, look, there were problems here with the depth of these footers. But the issue for our consideration is very limited here, as framed by the one assignment of error before you, which is whether or not the statute of repose as applied to this plaintiff, these unusual facts regarding the meeting, and being told, having the engineer involved very early on, and these unusual facts, is it a reasonable application of our statute of repose, although it is retroactive, to say to this claimant, 2 years is a reasonable period of time given these facts for you to have filed your lawsuit.
And the argument or the theory being that as long as you're using both the statute of repose and then tacking on an additional opportunity for the 2 years or 4 years, if it turns out to be 4 years, that defeats the claim against the extinguishment of a right, a substantive right to remedy.
Yes, Your Honor, because I don't think it in any way extinguishes the right. The plaintiffs have a vested substantive right. The issue is the remedy unreasonable if we say 2 years? Is a remedy unusual if we say 1 year? Probably so. Must the remedy be 4 years? Is that the reasonable period of time here? And I respectfully suggest on these facts for this claimant, 2 years is a reasonable period of time based on...
Would you agree that it would be, it's more valuable to the bench and the bar if we come up with a definitive, it's 2 years? As opposed to, I think, what Justice French was discussing with a just, quote, reasonable, in each case, the determination of reasonable is made by the trial court?
It would be more, it would be easier for claimants and defendants to know that the period is 2 years, period. There have, in this court's own opinions, there have been times when 2 years was not considered to be reasonable, others when it has been considered reasonable, and the court has always said, to my reading, that in this case, in this circumstance, what is reasonable? I don't know the court has yet said it should be 2 years in all circumstances for the following reasons. I think we are dealing with a very limited set of cases here where these actions accrued between before the statute of repose was enacted in 2005 and when the cause of action actually accrued. I don't know how many more of these cases will be before
in, the, in this case, counsel, it appears to me that the facts are even more confusing in that the Court of Appeals applied their own reasonable standard, and it looks like if we're to follow them, it would be 2 years and 3 weeks.
Their conclusion was that, Your Honor. I don't know if they, I defer to you if you have the language in front. I don't know if they specifically said 2 years plus 3 weeks. I know they said
well, that's the facts in this case. It was 2 years and 3 weeks. So, and the yes. Court of Appeals then said that's not reasonable. And I guess I'm following the Chief's question. Who determines reasonable and how is it made? Isn't that a legislative enactment? Or is that our job?
Well, I think it should be based on the facts of the case and based on the facts that come before you after the trial and after appeal and consideration of those facts. I think we are left, given the language of the statute, that it's an open-ended issue at this point. What is reasonable in the individual case?
But Mr. Roach, I think the proposition of law, it relates to whether or not the statute as applied to Oak Tree is unconstitutional, which gets back to what you were arguing earlier, sort of a case-by-case analysis, as opposed to a bright line, pick 2 years or pick 4 years rule. So what is your position with respect to the as-applied analysis on the unconstitutionality, which is what the legal issue is before us this morning?
Well, I submit that as applied to this plaintiff in these circumstances, 2 years is very reasonable because given the fact that this building was built in 1990, if they're given the period of time they request at this point, 17 years after we built this building, we're still exposed to a lawsuit over it having to do with the foundations. I think that is unfair to the builder. I think it is not consistent with the purpose of the statute of repose.
But how then does Oak Tree know, having not had a statute of limitations going in, a statute of repose going in, how does it know how quickly it must file its lawsuit? Which is, I think, the quandary that Mr. Ott presents us with. And how do we resolve that?
Your Honor, I tread lightly where on that issue, be honest with you, if I was in Mr. Ott's shoes at the time I was consulting with my client back then, it would be a difficult spot to be in because he did not have a statute in front of him that said, you have 2 years, you have 4 years. But we are all charged with knowledge of the statutes that are enacted, and in April of 2005, there was a statute enacted that says these causes of action must be brought within 10 years, and this is retroactive. The law was unsettled at that point as to what that means in terms of an accrued action at that period in history. The Groach case gave us a lot of direction in that regard, and I think applying that reasoning to this case, to these facts, is a fair way to dispose of this.
And you think Groach with the 2 years is a reasonable application based on what the given law was at the time?
I do, Your Honor, and the 2 year being not because the 2 year statute is for one type of cause of action and the 4 year is for another, but based on the language of the statute of repose and this 2 year limit that is provided at the end for years 8 and 9. If you're 8.5 years into this and your action accrues, you get a full 2 years beyond that. So I say that giving these plaintiffs a full 2 years to bring this cause of action is fair. And then in the facts of this case, how many cases do the court see where the expert who testifies at trial tells the client more than 2 years before the cause of action accrues, you have a lawsuit? So I think in fairness to my client, that 2 years should be the applicable period here.
Counsel, if we were to apply the fairness standard, would you agree that in 2003, Oak Tree had 4 years within which to file their lawsuit? In 2003. Did they have 4 years?
Yes, sir.
Did they file their lawsuit within 4 years?
No, sir. Well, within 4 years, yes, they did. Yes.
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did.
So the new statute took away their right, did it not?
With all due respect, I cannot agree with you there. What it took away, what it changed, was the remedy for a right that they had. There's no question they had a right to bring this lawsuit, always did. But what happened after 2003, the state legislature enacted a law that said that you have to bring these things within 10 years. It changed the period of time where you could seek redress, which was—
That happened in 2005, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So I'm having trouble again this morning figuring out how that did not extinguish an existing right in 2005. They had the right to file a lawsuit in January of 2005. They did not have the right to file the lawsuit, pursuant to your theory, in December of 2005. It's gone.
Correct.
How can you call that remedial? They lost a right.
Well, the same way that a statute of limitation would, if you want to say extinguished a right, you have to bring your lawsuit within a certain period of time for many different reasons.
From this point forward.
Yes. Yes. And I don't disagree with you, Your Honor, that these are unusual circumstances where you have— Sure. —a retroactive law, which the legislature so clearly made retroactive. And I think that all of the court's prior opinions indicate that this can be done as long as the claimant is given a reasonable period of time in the circumstances of the case.
Can we talk about that for just a second?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that in terms of the showing of a reasonable time, who has the burden to show? Is it Oak Tree's burden to show that they could not have brought the suit within the two-year period or the 18-month period? Who has the burden at that point? What is the burden? Is it clear and convincing at that point?
Well, for a statute that is alleged to be unconstitutional as applied, yes, it's clear and convincing. I suggest that burden is with the plaintiff, the claimant, of course, in the trial and in the appeal of this case, I tried to point out facts which would indicate that there was not clear and convincing proof that this was an unreasonable application of a period of time.
Okay, thank you.
If there are no other questions, I conclude. Thank you, Your Honors. It's an honor to appear before you.
Thank you. Mr. Ott, you have a little over, well, have about a minute and a half.
Thank you. Again, briefly, to follow up on that two-year kind of rule, if you implement a two-year rule in these types of cases, had our cause of action accrued in December or January, February or March of 2003, then what's our statute of limitations? If it's 2 years, then it's before the statute of repose is effective, because that's April of 2005. If it's 4 years, then we're well past this two-year rule that we were talking about. So a two-year rule isn't reasonable with a 4 year.
The intent of imposing an out, so to speak, on this statute of repose that is created in the Groach case isn't to duplicate the statute of limitations that was in place prior to the creation of the statute of repose. Because everybody agrees, you would have had a 4 year statute of limitations but for the statute of repose, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and then the statute of repose was enacted in December of 2005. And that changed the timing. It didn't take away a right to bring action. In fact, it preserved a right to bring action with the Groach case to give you a reasonable, well, Groach said 2 years. So it's not taking away retroactively. Your right to bring an action is still present. It's just temporally affected.
The Groach case, which came, of course, in 2008, well after all this, almost by the time our jury verdict came back. So the Groach case wasn't available to us when we were looking at all of this. But to answer your question, the two-year statute doesn't work with us in this particular case, because what it did when you did the two-year rule in the statute, well, that was, everybody knew at that point that the statute of repose existed and our cause of action accrued in year 8 or 9. So everybody understands why you have an additional 2 years. This case, our case accrued in 03, so we had, at that time, 4 years to file. The retroactive application cut that 4 years off. And in terms of what a substantive, if it's a substantive right that's affected, then that's what it does. It takes away a vested right, which our right was. It's a statutory as well as a case law, 4 year statute of limitations. So the retroactive application took that away, took a year, 2.5 years off of it.
So, counsel, if I understand, if the two-year rule would apply here, basically, as you said, you originally had until October 27th of 07 to file your suit. The statute of repose takes effect in April, right? And
right.
At that point, if the two-year rule would apply, you would have had to file by October 27th of 05, right?
That's
and you
correct.
Actually filed in December of 05.
Right.
So you missed it. I mean, if you look at the
yeah.
two-year rule, you missed it by 2 months or so.
The two-year rule that you're referring to wasn't in place. The Supreme Court had not rendered a decision on a garage.
Just saying, if we retroactively did it, that's how it would work, right? And you'd be missing the 2 months, basically.
That's exactly right,
okay.
And that's the reason we're fighting that. So had we, again, as we had said, if we had filed that, if the statute arose in earlier part of the year, if our cause of action arose earlier part of the year, and you implement the two-year rule, then it doesn't make sense, is it, when it relates to the effective date of that statute. So you'd have to say, well, it's 2 years plus, and then until when the statute started. So if our cause of action accrued in January of 03, for instance, well, we would then have how much time to file our lawsuit? So it'd be two, if you say 2 years, then it's December of 05, but that's before the statute of, January of 05, before the statute of repose. So this whole two-year, implementing a two-year rule doesn't work when you have a four-year statute of limitations. The only reasonable way to resolve this is just to use the statute as the reasonableness standard. Otherwise, we're into these, even in the Supreme Court, talking about what the factual dispute was that was resolved by the jury long ago.
And then that could be precedent for other cases that are similarly situated to you.
That's correct, in this and other fields. And so thank you, I understand my time is up.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time this morning.
Gentlemen, we'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decisions.